You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome to New Wisco Weekend. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. It's that time of year where you can see the last of the colorful leaves colliding with some scary Halloween displays set up across our area. Pumpkins can symbolize both. And in our cover story, Terry Barr learns about a group with goals to not only grow gigantic gourds, but to win the weigh-in competitions held around Halloween. Amanda Nimmer, like parents everywhere, has made a great use of a particular trick-or-treat tradition called the candy tax. We also have stories on a menopause bill making its way through the Wisconsin legislature and the famous actress supporting it. Another scary story? Three new Wisco counties make the top 10 for deer-related crashes in our state. And Pete Schwabba will have his classic cinema pick of the week. Plus, later, instead of a musician, this week we're doing something a little different, a favorite poem that is perfect for the last weekend in October. For this issue of New Wisco Weekend, I have the opening story. I take a look at the best ways to stay safe this Halloween. Going back as far as the 1970s, there have been scares and panics related to Halloween safety. Stories of needles or razor blades in apples and candy have been spread far and wide, resulting in hypervigilance by parents. So what are the best practices to remain safe this trick-or-treating season?
Yeah, I think when we talk about safety in general, every year somewhere in the country, there tends to be some sort of concern about candy. Now, is it happening everywhere? No. Is it something, you know, I know a few years ago there was a concern somewhere down in the South that there was drugs in somebody's candy. From a law enforcement perspective, most people that are using drugs are probably not going to put their drugs in the kids' bags, right? But those tend to go viral. Those tend to be social media posts that we see flood people's feeds around Halloween.
That's Lieutenant Megan Cash, Public Information and Community Resources Officer with the Appleton Police Department. Cash says to stay safe and for peace of mind, there are steps parents and kids can take to ensure that their candy and other treats are safe.
Wait till you get home looking through that candy. Know where you're going trick-or-treating. Understand some of those concerns can still exist, but more of that concern is about just like making sure things aren't unwrapped.
Staying vigilant doesn't mean that little trick-or-treaters shouldn't accept the occasional apple or a homemade treat, but instead pay attention to where the treats come from.
If you are aware of who your neighbors are, you interact with them on a frequent basis, you have that level of comfort from a parent's perspective that your child could receive something from that neighbor that you trust, absolutely make that decision. But overall, if you have those kids that are fired up and ready to go across half the city and places and neighborhoods they aren't aware of, then we would say use caution.
Staying safe at Halloween doesn't just mean inspecting candy. You should set a clear route for trick-or-treaters. Know where you're going to trick-or-treat. Always have a phone available and pay attention.
Have a way to contact family members. Understand that weather can change quickly. Understand that something could happen, right?
When choosing a costume, Cash said to avoid long trailing fabric that can be a tripping hazard. If your child's wearing a mask, make sure they have eye holes that are large enough for them to see clearly. Better yet, use makeup instead of a mask. Give trick-or-treaters flashlights or glow sticks to help them see better and so that drivers can see them better.
That starts with everything from their costume, right? So having costumes that are safe, less tripping hazards, having that ability to make sure they're visible. So whether that's the use of glow sticks or flashlights or something reflective, trying to maintain that visibility is really important. But let's say you are going as a group, staying in that group, making sure that when you're moving in that group that you're staying on the sidewalks, crossing the road safely is really important. You know, looking both ways, as much as it's exciting to be out there, we see so many pedestrians out on Halloween, that doesn't mean that the cars aren't still driving on the road.
Cash adds, awareness is also essential for people who aren't trick-or-treating, but rather driving on the roads full of little monsters, ghosts, witches, and Power Rangers.
Children may dart out between parked cars. That awareness is huge on Halloween, and just the as the nights continue to get darker faster, it's definitely something that we talk about.
We've talked a lot about trick-or-treating safety, but home safety is also important, and pets need to be considered when thinking of Halloween safety.
Right? It can be really scary for that pet at home to have the doorbell ringing all the time, people coming to the door. So recognizing where your pet maybe is going to feel more comfortable. Maybe it's not in that same floor as the door is. So if you're able to remove them in a different room, we don't want to have them get scared and run out of the house. And now we have an animal running that we're trying to find in the evening, right?
Cash added that if you have concerns about people coming up to your door during trick-or-treat hours, you don't have to participate.
Do what you feel comfortable doing related to trick-or-treating. If you want people to come to your door and ring your doorbell, you can do that. If you don't want to do that, the candy on the doorstep works. And also keep in mind that it's okay to just not participate too. It's okay to keep that light off and not invite trick-or-treaters to your door.
Fire safety is also a concern for Halloween fun. The National Fire Protection Association recommends using battery-operated candles or glow sticks inside of jack-o'-lanterns. Keep dried flowers, corn stalks, crepe paper, and other flammable materials away from open flames. And keep your exits and walkways clear of obstacles. Check with your local municipality for trick-or-treating days and times. And as you prepare for the spooky season, make it less scary by using the tricks for safety that make the treats even better. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Lisa Hale. I've already mentioned that when I was younger, my mother would inspect my trick-or-treat candy like it was a bioweapon. She practically x-rayed it, okay? And did she take some of it for herself? Probably. Here's our commentator, Amanda Nimmer, with that tried and true Halloween tradition, the candy tax.
This weekend for some counties, it is finally trick-or-treating. Oh man, how exciting is that? To be able to dress up as whatever you want, grab a bag, a pillowcase, a nice little bucket, and go door to door to strangers' houses and say trick or treat, and they reward you, not with tricks, but with treats. Oh, it's wonderful, isn't it? But for some of us, we may have outgrown it. And I say may because I think it's unfair that at a certain age it's not cool or ideal or socially acceptable to go trick-or-treating simply because you're an adult or late teen. Bums me out. So, if you still love to trick-or-treat and you want to feel that nostalgic rush coursing through you, all you have to do is hit up one of your relatives or close friends with kids. Plain and simple. I got to trick-or-treat for 10 extra years before I had my own children, simply because my sibling did not want to take her kids. And she kept having them, too. So as the older ones outgrew it, I still had the younger ones to tote around. It was great. Made core memories with the kids, got to walk around neighborhoods, trick-or-treat, epic. But Amanda, we don't get candy. We're just escorting the children. Oh, my friends, but you do. You do get candy. Because if you do take your niece or nephew or your friend's kids, or maybe you're babysitting a child and they ask you to take them, all you simply have to do is establish the candy tax. Oh, the candy tax. How beautiful it is. See, the candy tax is your compensation for taking the children trick-or-treating. And now, yes, they may fight you. They might be a little bit upset because, what do you mean you're taxing me? Well, child, I am preparing you for life right now, okay? You may not know it, but taxes are coming your way sooner rather than later. But here's how you justify the candy tax, because trust me, I've had to do it. a plethora of times over the years. And not only just me, but my group of friends who went with me, taking niece and nephews and small children trick-or-treating. See, the candy tax is established because we protected you and we guided you through the neighborhood for your trick-or-treat adventure. But then they'll say something like, Tanta, nothing happened. By the way, my niece and nephews call me Tanta. It's German for aunt. Nothing happened. Exactly. And you're welcome. Candy, please. Now, we cannot go overboard on the candy tax. It's just not cool. But I simply say anywhere from 2 to 5 pieces is enough. If you have a large group growing with you, I would say 2 max. Especially if you're hitting up the good neighborhoods, you know, the people who hand out the full-size candy bars or the juice boxes or my personal favorite, the string cheese. And it's not necessarily something you should spring on them either. You know, let them know as the night goes on, like, hey, I'm taking you, I'm protecting you, I'm doing all this. There's a candy tax at the end of this. We'll discuss details later. It's too much for your feeble small mind right now. Okay, feeble may be a stretch. But point being, you don't just spring it on them at the end and be like, hey, listen, I took you, I'm going to take some of your candy. You let them know this is a service you are providing in exchange for some delicious sugary treat. And then when they come at you saying, well, if my parents took me, they wouldn't do a candy tax. Oh, child, you don't know. You don't know what they do. Remember back in the day when our parents used to go through the candy to look to see if anything's been tampered with? They were taking our candy for themselves. And they still take it for themselves when you're fast asleep. Because it's not like you memorized every single piece of candy you've had, right? Right. Your parents tax you way more than the couple of pieces that your adult guide wants. Trust me, as a parent, I do it too. You think I'm gonna let my kid keep all his baby Ruths? Mm-mm. Those are mine. They just don't know it yet. Point being, you can have the best of both worlds. The responsibility of being an older person while still enjoying the fun through the younger, youthful eyes of your selected small child. So this trick-or-treat season, enjoy yourself. And know that at the end of the 2.5 to 3 hours of walking block to block, lit porch to lit porch, hordes of children in mediocre and the very rare occasion super awesome costumes, that there is a light at the end of that dark tunnel for you in the form of a Reese's peanut butter cup. From New Wisco Weekend, I'm Amanda Nimmer, and there you go.
It's the time of year when the Wisconsin Department of Transportation reminds residents to be on the lookout for deer. According to a press release, drivers are at a greater risk of crashing into a deer in October and November as hunting seasons get underway and the hours of daylight decrease. There were over 17,000 crashes involving deer last year in Wisconsin, and about a third of which occurred in October and November. 3 area counties make up the top 10 for deer crashes in 2024. There were 683 crashes in Fond du Lac County, 666 crashes in Outagamie, and 532 deer-related crashes in Winnebago County in 2024. Still ahead, we have our cover story. Learn how pumpkins, the bigger the better, aren't just for Halloween anymore. And the weather in northeast Wisconsin can mean snow on the pumpkins, just like the record-breaking amount of more than 4 inches we received back in 2019. But if you go back to the same date in 1950, our area hit high temperatures in the upper 70s. This year, Halloween looks to be dry, with 50 degrees falling to 35 at night. This is New Wisco Weekend.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
This is New Wisco Weekend on your local Civic Media radio stations WGBW and WISS. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. Coming up, menopause. It's scary. But first, we have Pete Schwabba's classic movie pick of the week.
New Wisco Weekend presents Pete Schwabba's classic movie pick of the week. One of the most critically acclaimed films this year is One Battle After Another, which is still playing in theaters. The director is Paul Thomas Anderson, and there is serious Oscar buzz, and you know the buzz is serious about the Oscars when it happens even before Oscar buzz season. This week's classic pick takes us back to 1996 for Anderson's first ever feature film, Hard Eight, a neo-noir crime story set in the world of casinos, diners, and cocktail lounges. The film tells the story of John, played by John C. Reilly, a down-and-out gambler and loner who loses everything in Vegas casinos. Things turn around a bit when John meets Sidney, played by Philip Baker Hall. You might remember Hall as the crazy library cop named Bookman, who tries to collect an age-old past due fee on Seinfeld. Sidney takes John under his wing and teaches him a better gambling strategy, which leads to a little more respect and comped hotel rooms in Reno casinos. While at the hotel, John and Sidney meet Clementine, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, who Sidney also starts to look after. Clementine is a waitress and part-time prostitute who ends up marrying John. Samuel Jackson plays Jimmy, another gambler who reveals that Sidney has a secret past, one that would completely change John's opinion about his new mentor.
You should be aware that I know some things about Atlantic City. I mean, I'm from back east originally. You didn't know that, but I know some things about Atlantic City. Where you going? Sidney, Sid. Hey, I said something to you. Don't walk away from me. I said I heard the story about Atlantic City.
What? Tough guy, huh? You can tell me what?
I haven't told John, but I know about Atlantic City. You shot his father in the face.
Paul Thomas Anderson is about the hottest director in Hollywood at the moment. His other credits include Boogie Nights, Magnolia, There Will Be Blood, and Punch Drunk Love, to name just a few. Oftentimes, a well-done short film can open the door to an entire career. Such is the case with Hard Eight. It was made possible after Anderson made a short called Cigarettes and Coffee, which got major buzz at Sundance and other film festivals. The short was about three groups of people at a diner near Las Vegas. Anderson was working as a TV production assistant at the time, and Philip Baker Hall was an actor on one of the projects. So Anderson passed him the script for Cigarettes and Coffee. Hall agreed to do the short for no money. The rest is history, as we now have an entire library of Paul Thomas Anderson films. If One Battle After Another lands Anderson an Academy Award, it will be his first, although he's been nominated 11 times for his work as a writer, director, and producer on 8 separate films. Hard Eight's original title was Sidney, named after Hall's character. There is also an appearance in the film by Philip Seymour Hoffman in a classic scene at a craps table. According to Philip Baker Hall, Hoffman improvised all of his lines. Reilly, Hall, and Hoffman all appeared in Anderson's follow-up Boogie Nights and also in Magnolia. As respected as Anderson is now as a filmmaker, this being his first feature film showed him what little control he really had as a director. His first cut of Hard Eight was 2.5 hours long, and he refused to make edits, forcing producer Robert Jones to fire him and his editor. It was Jones who approached Anderson in the first place about making a feature film after he saw Cigarettes and Coffee at Sundance. The final runtime of Hard Eight is 1 hour and 36 minutes, so some of the cuts might not have been so bad. Anderson did manage a smaller victory, though, when the film was accepted into the Cannes Film Festival when they requested the director's cut. With the studio demanding to change the title and the runtime, Anderson realized that making the movie was only half the battle. On every film since, Paul Thomas has had final cut approval. Final say or not, Anderson's first feature film is a great watch, so check out Hard Eight. It's this week's classic movie pick of the week. For more movie and entertainment talk, join me weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. for Nightlight here on the Civic Media Radio Network. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Pete Schwab.
A bipartisan group of Wisconsin lawmakers want to increase education about something that is very scary and spooky to many women, menopause. And they got some help from an Academy Award-winning actor. Civic Media's Savannah Tomei Olson has that story.
There's a huge information gap about menopause, even though most women will go through it. According to the National Institutes of Health, 85% of American women first look for information about menopause when they were already experiencing it or long after it started. They say 77% of women want menopause to be taught in schools, just like other hormonal shifts in our bodies. Now, State Senator Dianne Hesselbein and State Representative Robin Vining, both Democrats, along with Republican State Senator Rachel Cabral-Guevara, are sponsoring a bill that would increase menopause education. It would require the Department of Health Services create a resource page and pamphlet about menopause, just like they have pages for hundreds of other conditions, from measles to STDs to heart disease. Here's Vining.
Many women say, I don't feel like myself. And they deserve to know why that is and what they can do about it.
There was a public hearing in the Senate's Health Committee Wednesday, and lawmakers heard testimony from Academy Award-winning actor Halle Berry, who's advocating for menopause resources across the country.
It's stigmatized. We're afraid because we're ignorant to what is happening to our bodies. That's why education is so important. And that's why I'm here. I have real life examples of how more education would have saved me almost 4 years of self-exploration. I would love to have gotten this information from my health care providers.
According to the lawmakers, adding this extra information on menopause and creating other resources would not cost the state any extra money. For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
If you like New Wisco Weekend and want to hear anything again, you can always find our shows at civicmedia.us. Go to shows, weekly shows, and there we are, New Wisco Weekend. So what's in your candy dish this year? A new Instacart report shows Starburst is the favorite for kiddos, but cites a new trend of fancy dark chocolates as a popular choice. I'll choose the fancy dark chocolates. We're going big for this issue's cover story. Have you noticed any really, and I mean really, big pumpkins this year? Did you know that there is an enthusiastic group of farmers in our state who grow, then show huge pumpkins every fall? Pam Yonke with the Midwest Farm Report talked a little bit about it earlier in the week.
These people are stone cold serious about giant pumpkins. They covet their own recipes on how they grow their pumpkins. This year, the giant pumpkin weighed in up in Altoona, 2,491 pounds. That's not even a record.
Huge pumpkins coming up on New Wisco Weekend. You're listening to New Wisco Weekend for WISS and WGBW News. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. Our lead correspondent, Terry Barr, tracked down a gigantic gourd grower in the Marquesan area to learn more about his passion for pumpkins. And in the process, she found out that while it's a fun hobby for some, others seriously want to win weigh-in competitions across the country.
You're probably seeing pumpkins for sale all across Wisconsin right now. Did you know our state isn't just known for growing great pumpkins, but what about growing great big pumpkins? Here to tell us all about it, I'm so looking forward to having this discussion, Mike Schmidt. Mike is the treasurer with the Wisconsin Great Giant Pumpkin Growers. Mike, thanks for joining me.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I'm going to be honest. I did not know a group like this existed. Why did you decide, okay, we need support. We need a group to help support these giant pumpkin growers?
We're really like a social club that all enjoy the hobby of growing giant pumpkins and teaching people about growing giant pumpkins. Yeah, it's just a good friendly club.
There's an art and a challenge, isn't there? Has this year been a good year for giant pumpkins?
Yeah, like the biggest pumpkin grown in the state this year was 2,491 pounds. That's a little shy of the state record. The state record is 2,551. So anytime you get close to the state record, you know, one can assume that the year was pretty good. So there was quite a few big pumpkins grown in the state, not specifically by me. I specifically didn't have a great year.
Oh.
But the year itself was just fine for growing giant pumpkins. We did have a week of really warm weather right around pollination time, which that can put the plant under stress and abort the pollinations of the fruit. And because we have a specific window of how long we want to grow the pumpkins, like that timing is kind of critical to us. And that week of warm weather kind of made it tough for a few of us.
What makes it so different in the weather and any other challenges to grow these giant pumpkins compared to the regular ones we're seeing for sale right now?
The weather thing is nothing real different there. I guess the big factor is the amount of care that goes into these pumpkins. I always told people, like when I first started out, like each pumpkin that I grew, and I started out growing three pumpkins, at peak time was taking me 10 hours a week. So I could be putting in 30 hours a week to grow three pumpkins. Now I'm a little better, a little more efficient on that. You know, it's probably closer to 6-7 hours per pumpkin per week. And that's at like a really competitive level. Like, you know, if you didn't want to do that, you didn't have to do that, but you might not be able to expect as big a result. So yeah, a lot of it's just the care and effort and that goes into it.
It's like a baby. You have to go out and take care of it.
It actually is, you know, and people don't realize that, but it's like you check on it every day. Like when you wake up, you go out there, same thing, you know, before you go to work, everything's, and then it's the first thing you check when you get home, then you work out in the patch, and then you check it again before evening. So there's just a lot of, like, there's a beaten path to every good grower's patch that where the grass doesn't grow because they go there back and forth quite often.
What made you personally decide that you wanted to grow some giant pumpkins?
I really just wanted to see if I could do it. You know, it was kind of one of those things where a guy heard about it, and like actually every year I just look online because it's quite often the world record gets broken. I just kind of check out online every year, like, hey, what are these guys growing? And the weights kept going up and whatnot. And it just never really worked out for me, like when that was going on, because I was in college and whatnot. And then finally I got a place of my own. And I just threw in a regular garden, and then I realized, I was like, hey, I could actually try growing one of these giant pumpkins that I've always heard about. And then so I just kind of planned up that year, and then the next year I tried it out just basically to see if I could do it. I really wanted to get a 1,000-pounder, so I gave it a shot.
Did you do it?
I did more than that. I grew a 2,106-pounder. It was I can't remember if it was the third or fourth biggest in the world that year, and it was the ninth biggest of all time, and I was the international rookie of the year, so I did really well. But I put tons of time researching, and like I said, that was back to the 10 hours of pumpkin a week. I put a lot of effort into it.
It almost sounds like it's more than a hobby, even though you are doing this with other friends and you have the camaraderie of the Wisconsin Giant Pumpkin Growers group. Is this something you've kind of fallen in love with? Like you have to do this every year now?
Yeah, kind of. You know, I've taken years off, but yeah, you still just grow a couple, you know, half-heartedly to get a good like 800-pound porch pumpkin or something like that. But it takes a lot, but yeah, it's fun to do. And then, like I said, years that I don't grow, I often find myself kind of bored. Like, you know, what am I should be out here doing some work on growing some pumpkins. So, but yeah, it's kind of I think it's kind of an obsessive thing for a lot of people. It's just the thing of like, how big can I get it? It's just kind of like, how fast could this car go? Or you know what I mean? Like, it's always just like push that limit, just, you know, and it's competitive and it's fun. And so, yeah, we enjoy it.
I love the idea of trick-or-treating kids coming up and finding an 800-pound porch pumpkin. That is just awesome.
Well, and I've said before, too, like these giant pumpkins, they're like ice cream. Everybody loves them, and especially kids. They just gravitate. Like, they just love seeing them. And unfortunately, the giant ones aren't always orange. So I like to try and grow them orange because the kids see them and they just light up. They really gravitate towards them and whatnot. But you get some of these white ones and stuff, they kind of look like rocks. So the kids might not even recognize them. That's why I like to keep them orange if I can.
Oh, I love this. I am talking with Mike Schmidt. He is with the Wisconsin Giant Pumpkin Growers. Is it something to be able to say, I am a giant pumpkin grower?
Yeah. There were some pins out there one year that said, I grow giant pumpkins. What's your superpower? And I always thought that was a fun saying. So, but yeah, I'm known among everyone that I know as, you know, the pumpkin guy or whatever. And people I haven't seen in a long time, that's the first thing they ask about was, you know, how big was the pumpkin this year, you know?
And I guess I need to ask you this. What happens to a lot of the giant pumpkins? You put it on a porch, maybe. What do other people do with theirs?
So, yeah, a lot of pumpkins, some growers, you know, because they put all that effort into them, they want to just display them at their house and they really enjoy them and there's no price on them. Other growers, they will sell them. There's a market for that, like to display at big businesses or whatnot, as well as carvers. Some of these big pumpkin farms that have all the corn mazes and whatnot, they like to buy them for displays or carve them there as well. Other people might explode them with some tannerite or drop them off a crane. They have pumpkin regattas where you just, you know, cut a hole in them, make a boat out of them. So yeah, there's a lot of things you can do, and I've done most of those things. If I can sell them, I typically do to recover some, you know, inputs on them, because I get a little crazy with input, so it's good to recoup some costs if a guy can.
And all the time you put in.
Yeah. And then, like, but this year I kind of lost a lot of my pumpkins. I only had really one left, and I decided just to keep that one for display.
I grew up on a farm, and my dad one year gave half of the garden to pumpkins, but he didn't do what you're saying giant pumpkin growers do, you know, kind of make it a smaller crop. We just put seeds everywhere, and it took over the entire garden. So my dad said never again would we grow pumpkins. But I love what you're telling me about the giant pumpkins. Is there something else we should know?
The big thing that shocks a lot of people is during these pumpkins' peak growth, we're talking they're put on 50 to 60 pounds in a day. And people can't fathom that, but you got to realize you have one growing season. And these pumpkins are getting close to 2,500 pounds for a top pumpkin, and it only has so many days to do that. And the growth curve starts out when it's little. It starts out smaller than a golf ball when you pollinate that. And then by about 20 days after pollination, it's still only the size of a volleyball, and you got like maybe 120 days max to grow the pumpkin. So from volleyball, you know, it's already 20 days, you got 100 days to still get that weight on. And then they ramp up where they get up to 50, 60 pounds a day at peak, and then they ramp, you know, down. And at the end of the year, you're only doing 5-6 a day. So like when you start doing the math, yeah, it has to hit that in order to get there.
Can you hear them growing on some of those days, or you think you can?
You can. I shouldn't say you can see them grow, but like when they're small and they take off, because they'll be doing like 5 a day, but they could instantly just crank to like 50. Literally, like you could go inside, watch some TV for a couple hours, walk back out and go, yep, that thing grew. You can notice that if you get a really good one on for that first couple of weeks. Once they get bigger, you know, it's harder to see, you know, that amount of growth. But when they're small, like you can almost watch them grow. And something I do that definitely not a lot of people do is I try and grow on a scale, and I have scales on my pumpkins. So I can literally just watch the scale move too, if you want to sit out there and have a drink and watch the scale move.
So
we're always hoping for at least 2 pounds an hour, you know.
Oh my gosh. I guess bottom line for you, why do you love this? I mean, it sounds so fun, but it sounds like a lot of work, expense. You've got to worry about weather, cost, environment. But bottom line, again, it seems like this is something that's really fun for you.
It's the big thing for me is how big can I get it? Can I be better than everyone else? You know, that's the whole thing, is how big can I get it?
Is there anything else that I should ask you or that you would want people to know about this?
You know, and you hear me talk about these crazy things like growing on a scale, this and that, all its hours. And one thing I don't want to do is discourage people from growing, because they're like, and I've heard this before, you know, oh, I would have to do all this stuff. And boy, I don't really want to do that. And I'll tell you what, there was a lady at work. I gave her some seeds. She didn't put in a ton of effort as far as, you know, like a competitive grower would, just as like a regular gardener would. And she grew a 270-pound pumpkin, and she just wanted a nice pumpkin for, you know, take pictures with her grandson. And she was absolutely thrilled. And, you know, she wasn't out there with a scale or 10 hours a week or anything like that. So, yeah, it's still fun, and it's very reasonable for just an average gardener to grow a 250 to a 500 pound pumpkin.
I love, and here you were helping someone else make their own kind of giant pumpkin dream come true.
Right.
Great. This has been so much fun to talk with you about. People drive around during this season, trick or treating, going to the corn mazes, like you said, they should keep an eye out for these giant pumpkins. I would think they're pretty easy to spot.
They are easy to spot, but I mean, you'd be surprised at, you know, people that just haven't ever seen them, you know. And like my pumpkin's still in the trailer, and I took it to the grocery store the other day, and there's always people taking pictures and this and that. They have a number of questions that are usually pretty common among people that they ask. And
look at that. You are just putting smiles on people's faces by driving around with this big pumpkin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've even had them in the box of the truck, have a 1,000-pounder in the box of the truck, and take it through the drive through, and they'll like stick their head out the window, and they're like, is that a pumpkin back there? So yeah, it can be fun.
Yes, it is.
You only get to keep them for so long. So
yeah, that's kind of the bummer. But then I guess you get to start it all over again. So that's something to look forward to. Mike Schmidt, he is with Wisconsin Giant Pumpkin Growers. Mike, thank you for educating all of us about these wonderful giant pumpkins.
No problem.
Coming up, Alfred Noyes and the Highwayman. This is New Wisco Weekend.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This is New Wisco Weekend. I'm Lisa Hale. Normally at this time, we'd bring you a musician from one of our other fantastic Civic Media shows, like Nightlight with Peach Wabba or Max Inc. Radio. But today, in honor of the spooky season and Halloween, I'd like to share with you my favorite poem. It's called The Highwayman by Alfred Noyes. The wind was a torrent of darkness among the gusty trees. The moon was a ghastly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas. The road was a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor, and the highwayman came riding, riding, riding. The highwayman came riding up to the old inn door. He'd a French cocked hat on his forehead and a bunch of lace at his chin, a coat of the claret velvet and breeches of brown doe skin. They fitted with never a wrinkle. His boots were up to the thigh, and he rode with a jeweled twinkle, his pistol butts a twinkle, his rapier hilt a twinkle under the jeweled sky. Over the cobbles he clattered and clashed in the dark inn yard. He tapped with his whip on the shutters, but all was locked and barred. He whistled a tune to the window. Who should be waiting there but the landlord's black-eyed daughter, Bess, the landlord's daughter, plaiting a dark red love knot into her long black hair. And dark in the dark old inn yard, a stable wicket creaked, where Tim, the ostler, listened. His face was white and peaked. His eyes were hollows of madness and his hair like moldy hay. But he loved the landlord's daughter, the landlord's red-lipped daughter. Dumb as a dog, he listened, and he heard the robber say, "One kiss, my bonny sweetheart. I'm after a prize tonight, but I shall be back with the yellow gold before the morning light. Yet if they press me sharply and harry me through the day, then look for me by moonlight. Watch for me by moonlight. I'll come to thee by moonlight, though hell should bar the way." He rose upright in the stirrups. He scarce could reach her hand, but she loosened her hair in the casement. His face burnt like a brand, and as the black cascade of perfume came tumbling over his breast, he kissed its waves in the moonlight. Oh, sweet black waves in the moonlight. Then he tugged at the rein in the moonlight and galloped away to the west. He did not come in the dawning, he did not come at noon, and out of the tawny sunset, before the rise of the moon, when the road was a gypsy's ribbon, looping the purple moor, a redcoat troop came marching, marching, marching. King George's men came marching up to the old inn door. They said no word to the landlord, they drank his ale instead, but they gagged his daughter and bound her to the foot of her narrow bed. Two of them knelt at her casement with muskets at their side. There was death at every window and hell at one dark window, for Bess could see through her casement the road that he would ride. They had tied her up to attention with many a sniggering jest. They had bound a musket beside her, the muzzle beneath her breast. "Now keep a good watch," and they kissed her. She heard the doomed man say, "Look for me by moonlight. Watch for me by moonlight. I'll come to thee by moonlight, though hell should bar the way." She twisted her hands behind her, but all the knots held good. She writhed her hands till her fingers were wet with sweat and blood. They stretched and strained in the darkness, and the hours crawled by like years. Till now, on the stroke of midnight, cold on the stroke of midnight, the tip of one finger touched it. The trigger, at least, was hers. The tip of one finger touched it. She strove no more for the rest. Up she stood to attention with the muzzle beneath her breast. She would not risk their hearing. She would not strive again. For the road lay bare in the moonlight, black and bare in the moonlight, and the blood of her veins in the moonlight throbbed to her love's refrain. Thud a lot, thud a lot, thud a lot. Had they heard it? The horse hoofs ringing clear. Thud a lot, thud a lot, thud a lot. In the distance, were they deaf that they did not hear? Down the ribbon of moonlight, over the brow of the hill, the highwayman came riding, riding, riding. The redcoats looked to their priming. She stood up straight and still. Tut-a-lot, tut-a-lot, in the frosty silence. Tut-a-lot, tut-a-lot, in the echoing night. Nearer he came, and nearer, her face was like a light. Her eyes grew wide for a moment. She drew one last deep breath. Then her finger moved in the moonlight. Her musket shattered the moonlight, shattered her breast in the moonlight, and warned him with her death. He turned, he spurred to the west. He did not know who stood, bowed with her head over the musket, drenched with her own blood. Not till the dawn he heard it, and his face grew gray to hear how Bess, the landlord's daughter, the landlord's black-eyed daughter, had watched for her love in the moonlight and died in the darkness there. Back he spurned like a madman, shrieking a curse to the sky, with the white road smoking behind him and his rapier brandished high. Blood red were his spurs in the golden noon. Red wine was his velvet coat when they shot him down on the highway. Down like a dog on the highway, and he lay in his blood on the highway with a bunch of lace at his throat. And still of a winter's night, they say when the wind is in the trees, when the moon is a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas, when the road is a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor, a highwayman comes riding, 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 a highwayman comes riding up to the old inn door. Over the cobbles he clatters and clangs in the dark inn yard. He taps with his whip on the shutters, but all is locked and barred. He whistles a tune to the window, and who should be waiting there but the landlord's black-eyed daughter, Bess, the landlord's daughter, plaiting a dark red love knot into her long black hair.
Thank you for being a part of New Wisco Weekend, your look at huge pumpkins and Halloween. New Wisco Weekend is written by Terry Barr and Lisa Hale, directed and produced by Lisa Hale. Our lead correspondent is Terry Barr, with features from Savannah Tomei Olson, Peach Waba, and our commentator, Amanda Nimmer. If you have a story you'd like to hear covered, please feel free to email anytime, lisa.hale@civicmedia.us. I'm Civic Media Northeast Wisconsin Bureau Chief Lisa Hale for WISS and WGBW News. Be unstoppable.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.